City Arts Community Conversations podcast explores the diversity of Nottingham's creative community. Series 2 shines a light on the lives and work of deaf, disabled and neurodivergent artists in Nottingham. Part of City Arts Residence Project, it's hosted by Laura Guthrie and Jay Sandu. The production is supported using public funding by the National Lottery through Arts Council England. Thank you for listening.
Today we're welcoming two disabled artists who are creating work or have created work as part of the City Arts Commission programme, and we'll talk a bit more about that programme a bit later on. But welcome to Zoe and Izzy. We have Zoe Milner with us today. Zoe is a visual artist studying fine art at Nottingham Trent Uni, whose work uses protest as a starting point. And as part of the residence project, she created an installation inspired by her experience as a deaf person. The work combined typography with imagery from BSL. And today, Zoe is going to be voiced by our BSL interpreter, Kat. So welcome, Zoe. Izzy Hollis, welcome. Izzy is a theatre designer and a puppet maker and puppet theatre maker. Izzy's last piece was called Why Fish, and it explored her experience of living with Tourette's, and it was presented as part of a puppet cabaret held here at City Arts. And all of that was part of the residence programme as well. So welcome, Izzy. Very nice to meet you. Best to meet you too. So shall we start with you each just telling us a bit about your practice, what kind of work you create? And also if you could audio describe yourselves for our audience, and we'll start with you, Zoe.
So today I've got on a purple hat. I have short brown hair and I'm quite tall. And I've got a black sweatshirt on today. And I'm female. My work practices or focuses on deaf identity and deaf culture. I study at Nottingham Trent University, and my aim is to create work that represents deaf culture and protesting for the deaf community. I use typography and different colours to show that I'm proud of my identity and to show that the deaf community can be beautiful. Recently, I had a residency here and I created a large piece of typography that linked to my lived experience growing up as a deaf person. I was born deaf, but my family are all fully hearing. So I wanted to show both the negative and positive aspects of that communication and that lifestyle and any issues that I might have experienced mixing between both worlds. I want to educate and raise awareness for people looking at my art. And it's really important that my work is protesting, so it links to the BSL bill. I hope that in the future BSL will be recognised as a foreign language. And I hope that this will influence my work in the future, and then I'll be able to broaden my experiences and educate further.
Thank you. Thank you, Zoe. It's really interesting. It's interesting to hear about where the motivation comes from for your work and the idea that the work you're creating is going to change people's minds. And obviously, like you said about the BSL bill, that's a relatively new piece of legislation. Well, very new. It was only this year. But a massive step forward for the deaf community. So it's really interesting that your work, you're beginning your career in a way at a time where things have shifted just a little bit. But like you say, there's still a lot more work to do. And the work that you're producing is very much about raising awareness and changing some of those perceptions. Really interesting. Thank you, Zoe. Thank you.
Can I just add?
Yeah.
Zoe's got some of the nicest trainers that I've seen on, and I don't feel like that was mentioned in that audio description. Like, I clocked Jay's as soon as she was here. I felt like that should have been. I feel like people just need to be aware.
Didn't think about my trainers after describing myself. People watching can only see from the waist up.
They're missing out.
Brilliant. Thank you. Izzy, Would you like to describe yourself and your work to us, to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I am average height. I've got blue eyes. I've got brown, messy hair up in a loose sort of high ponytail. I'm wearing a green dress that's got some like pink embroidery on it. And I've got a cup of coffee right in front of me.
Very important things, and I'm right in front of you.
Very important thing. As for my work, I am a theatre maker that I specialise in puppetry. So I perform and make puppets. And as you said, yes, I've been working on a show called Why Fish that I'm hoping will sort of raise awareness and spread like the message of acceptance about people with tics, as well as just like share my experiences and
fishes
and as well as, yeah, just to spread lots of information, because it's a really misunderstood sort of condition. Only 10% of people with Tourette's swear, and that's all that's ever really shown in the media. So it's just, there's a lot of unknown stuff that's still being investigated, and I think it's really important to let people know, and that there's also just so many different types of tics, and everyone's experience is different. So it's, the show concentrates on my experience, and the hope is that other people might find that relatable. And I'm currently in the process of applying for further funding, so I want to take it on a tour in the future. So fingers crossed.
Thank you. Again, somebody else making work that's very much embedded in your lived experience and about raising people's awareness to the different lived experiences that disabled people have and the impact that it has on you, and how other people can understand and build their own knowledge and understanding of all our different lived experiences. Yeah. It's really interesting. And the fact that you want to take it on tour as well and kind of take it as far as you can. I think is in Wales, BSL is part of the curriculum in education. Wales are quite... Yeah.
And Scotland, it's actually a legally recognised language. Wales, they've recognised it. English, we haven't quite us. No, quite shocked by now. But...
It's terrible.
If you think back to the start of the pandemic and all of those emergency statements that came out, standing in front of the lecterns, not one in England had a BSL interpreter present.
Don't know, you were rusty.
Yeah,
for quite early on, there was nothing. And then there was an interpreter, but you had to go onto a separate channel.
Yeah.
It wasn't on the main BBC channel, and that became quite confusing for the deaf community, because we had to work out, you had to go on plus one or find the channel where the interpreter was put in vision. We had to check all the channels, and just it was hunting for the interpreter, really.
Which, when you consider how important that information was for everybody, is shocking, because the Scottish and the Welsh announcements all had BSL interpreters on next to the lectern, next to the...
Do we think that's an England thing or a government thing? Or is that an England thing?
I feel like it should be nationally the same, but actually it's very different between England, Wales and Scotland. Like, I don't know where the decisions are made, but we're not all the same. We were all, the UK should be respected equally across. It's our rights. But England hasn't done that. I feel that we're behind. It's not fair.
Yes, I agree. So it'd be interesting to hear a bit more about having the bursaries from City Arts. Could one of you, I don't mind who answers the question first, but it'd be nice to hear from both of you about the process of getting the bursary, what it actually is, this program that you're on. It's called Residence, isn't it? Could you tell us a little bit more about the process of getting the residency and what it actually gave you in practical terms?
Oh, it's such a long time ago. So I saw it advertised at university. I didn't really know much about it at that point, but one of my lecturers said, "You're deaf." So they gave me the application, so I applied for the bursary that way. it felt like a perfect match for me because I'm deaf and it was aimed for deaf and disabled artists. My English isn't good, so that was a bit difficult, that application process. But I felt it was important to apply. I didn't think I'd ever be successful, but I was really shocked when I was awarded it. I had the email to say that you've got the place and that you've been successful in your application. I was really excited and happy about that because I just didn't expect it. And then I came here and I met lots of people. And everyone's been so nice. I mean, communication has been difficult, but it's been a really good experience. I had a 3-day residency here, so that was good. I was able to produce a lot of work. It's really valuable to me as an artist.
So did you, it's interesting that your lecturer encouraged you to apply. I think that's really encouraging that at university that lecturers are looking out for opportunities like this. And also I wonder, when you said you came here and did 3 days work, was that practically here creating your work in this space?
Yeah, I came here to the space. It was difficult because there was a limit for the time and when people were in and out of the building. So finding that time was difficult. But Alison booked some date times for me. I think it was a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday block. And I had big pieces of paper and I did my work here. So yeah, 3 days work, it was really good. I was able to work quite fast and hack about a lot of ideas about my life and my experiences. And that really fed into my work. It's a good use of time.
Would you mind describing the work that you made?
I hadn't really planned a lot before I came here. I mean, I was on holiday, if I'm honest, and I was traveling, so I didn't have a lot of time. So, yeah, so something. But I had an idea when I got here. So I got my ideas out quickly in rough. And it linked to my childhood, communication difficulties I had. I feel like I had a lot of experience that I could then bring to the work. And I wanted it to then use my work to educate people. And I wanted people to not be in a patronizing way. And people were amazed really at the size of it all. And the fact that I hadn't put in a lot of planning beforehand. I had no technology, I was just painting. But the end result was perfect, really. It was very good.
Could you describe the end result to us? What did the paintings look like?
I had long rolls of paper, and I'd painted all of them. And so there were strips of paper everywhere. And now someone was like, oh my goodness, it's so bright, so it's colourful. So I had 3 days, really, where this was in situ. And I think it was really good that people could see the bright colours and that raised interest and awareness and challenged people's perception. And it was a really beautiful representation of the colour that can be found metaphorically in the deaf community. And so, yeah, it was a good experience.
And a little question here. You said you was travelling. Now, these might be ridiculous questions, but is there, like, accents in BSL and is BSL international?
No, for example, I was in America and they use American Sign Language, ASL, and the alphabet there is a one-handed alphabet. But here in the UK, it's different. But for example, within the UK, you could go to Cornwall for example, and the numbers would be completely different in the way that they're signed. And this happens nationally. You're like, oh my goodness, I live in this country and I'm visiting, but what are these numbers? Globally, yeah. Sign language is different around the world. Mm. But also within the UK, England, Scotland, Wales, Ireland, we all have different types of signing and accents. Oh, and in Manchester, there's a strong deaf community there, and there was a big deaf event recently, and it was a little fun, but I would meet people from the UK. I'd be, what earth are you signing? It's so different. Oh, you're from Scotland. Okay, now that makes sense. So it's a really good experience, particularly at that event of meeting people in the UK. But it was a challenge for me to adjust my communication and to recognise those regional variations. I mean, even London, if you go to London, the signing's very different there.
On one.
Indeed, here we are. Panel. Thank you very much, though.
By a lion. Crackers.
Listen, how did you come about to be on the...
Lots of work in the past with City Art and to do a lot of work with Alison. And so I've been following them online for ages, and I saw it pop up on Instagram, and other people that I know from Nottingham were sending it me, and I was like, I'll get it in. And then I did, and I got the wildcard funding, which was really exciting. Because I've had this idea for the show since I started uni, like 8 years ago, or any of us. And so I was like, this is an opportunity to actually do this thing that I've been brewing for years and to get started and get that ball rolling. And it was just really amazing. Alison was so supportive, and she's helped put me in touch with people. And so we had some days here as like an R&D process. Like, I made the puppets, and they're like small, sort of ball size, but they're shaped like brain neurons, and they have stretchy, elasticated legs. And so during the show, they attach onto my body in different places by magnets. So it was a lot of sewing and gluing to make them. And I did that here. And then I also rehearsed here with Sarah Westbalstar helped me with some of like the directing and like helping me with the story plotting, because there was just so many ideas. And so, yeah, we did a scratch performance at the Puppet Festival, which was great. And it had a really nice energy. We got some really lovely audience feedback as well, which was so good to hear. And just, yeah, it lasted. I had like odd days over the course of months. So feels like it's taken the whole year to do. But it's been really good.
Is it why puppets?
So when I was studying theatre design at Trent, our first module was puppetry with Sean Meyer. And I just fell in love with the art form. And I was like, this is what I want to do. And so I've just, pursued it in every avenue I possibly could since.
And you had no idea before you went to uni that that's what you wanted to...
No, I saw it on the modules, and I was like, I'm more there for set and costume, but it's just another street to my back, And then, that module just changed everything. And it's been perfect because for my tics, like everyone in the theatre community, and especially the puppet community, has been so supportive and lovely, and no one's ever batted an eyelid at it. And I'm so grateful to be in a career that is so accommodating, that is so loving. And I just feel like it would be so much harder if I was working like in an office where people would be like, can you be quiet? Like, when I, it doesn't matter if I'm being noisy, whether I'm in a studio making puppets, like, and everyone's just so, like, just happy for me to be there rather than, like, wanting me to be quiet and, fit in.
isn't it intriguing how we've met quite a few deaf and disabled artists through this podcast, and something that seems to resonate with everybody is that sense of belonging, that sense as a deaf or disabled person that in this space where I'm creating work, whether that's poetry, music, theatre, visual art, it's a space where I feel I belong and where I feel my voice can be heard.
Have you ever worked in an office? Because interestingly, you say that when we've spoken to everyone, literally every podcast, someone has said, I can't imagine being in an office. I can't imagine doing this in an office. And have you ever?
I did 3 days in an office over the pandemic, because I did work front of house at the theatre. Okay. And because it's owned by the council, we shifted once we were furloughed to try and like help call around vulnerable people. And even though I knew it was the same people I worked with at the theatre in the office, but the pressure I was putting on myself to not tick like down the phone at these vulnerable people. So I was very aware that everyone's on phone calls trying to help people or trying to get work done. And If I'm shouting fish down the phone, that's very confusing. So it just was mentally really exhausting. And I after 3 days, I was like, I don't think I could do this anymore. Like, it was eye-opening.
I'd be really interested to know a little bit more about the kind of motivation behind the work that you produce. So you was talking very much about the protest angle of the work that you produce. And do you see yourself as an artist always doing work like that? Or do you sometimes feel, just because I'm a deaf artist, my work doesn't have to always be about my lived experience? Or do you feel it's just so much part of you that it will always be part of your work?
I think my work will be varied. At the moment, the focus is on protest, because that's a strong part of my life. And so that influences my practice. But my full lived experience isn't all this protest. At times I felt quite vulnerable. I think it's important that my art can raise awareness. So yes, there will be an aspect of protest in it, but when the protest is successful, then there's other opportunities. So also I'm interested in like digital art, photography, newspaper culture, that type of as well, printing. And some of my work has been focusing on like the finger spelling of the alphabet and hand shapes linked to the alphabet, and creating posters and artwork that can educate about BSL so that people can see my work and then learn from it as well.
For you as well, is it? Do you feel your work continuing along the same vein, or have there been other topics you've looked at?
So really, the tick show is the only show that's really focused on my ticks. Normally, often the work I'm creating it's to a different brief, or I do a lot of performance work where I'm performing other people's puppets, and then the ticks are just something that comes alongside, and when I'm performing I don't tend to tick, so that's not often a problem. It's
not easy. No, but
yeah, I don't know. I think they're researching it, but apparently like people with like the ticks, like when they're like playing instruments and stuff, they won't tick. It's like it's something to do with it, with the level of focus.
Or like all your brain power's been used to do something.
I'm not 100%, but
that's interesting.
It's really nice. So it's kind of like a nice break. So yeah, a lot of people will like sing or like play an instrument. It's like a bit of almost a break ticks.
Interesting though, because you're creating a piece of work, yet when you perform, the chances are that you're not ticking. So how does that?
So the show is very confusing for me because when I'm performing, I don't tick, but also when I talk about my ticks, I tick more. And the show is both of those.
I think before it's when you've had to put on the tick in the performances.
It's very interesting.
Yeah,
dynamic. But it was really interesting getting audience feedback, because like people who know me and came to see were like, I could tell that tick wasn't real. And it's like, I don't know how to portray them genuinely, because my plan is for like the further development of the show is to sort of like shut myself in a room for a day and just film myself. Film and record it. Just like trigger it as much as I can. Yeah. Be tired and,
It's like a mad like social experience.
Yeah, that.
Can I ask what you feel the bursary, the commission, the residence from City Arts has done for you in terms of where it can take you next?
For me, it let me have that base of a show, so I've now got a really solid base to apply for further funding to develop the show further. I'd love to make it so it's, a fully formed show rather than just a scratch show. I want to add like a soundtrack to the back of it and eventually take it on a tour, as well as like try and make it as accessible as possible. And just there's so much I want to do with it as a show. I think that the bursary just gave me that sort of really strong base. And also like the connections with Sarah and City Arts as a whole is just always so supportive. So it's good. And it's hopefully the Arts Council will the fact that I've got this sort of strong base and it will help me get that funding for future steps.
Yeah, I'm sure it will. I'm sure it will. Filled. Zoe, kind of about you, what do you feel the residents at City Arts has done in terms of where it can take you next or what ideas it's given you?
I feel like the residency has really helped me develop my ideas. Without the residency, I might have been lacking clarity on what I'm going to do. So I know that university finishes soon. But at university, whilst I'm there, I don't have a lot of space. And at home, it's the same. I don't have access to this space here or the materials. So it's a really good opportunity for me to do a large piece of work. And I feel like having done the residency, I feel like I've got ideas that I can take with me to the future or that I could possibly take into different directions. It's also given me confidence for the future as well. Because I've developed work at university, but I had more time here to develop those ideas in detail.
So it's been a really good starting point for, well, not even starting point. I think what you're saying, it feels like it's given you, well, confidence is one thing, which is just so important, isn't it? Because as creatives, we doubt ourselves so much often, don't we? So that's really important that it's given you that. But that idea of giving you clarity on what it is you want to do and how you want to create work. But importantly, just the space, I suppose, you both said that having this physical space here made a real difference to you.
It really did. And I know I already had a connection with City Arts, but I don't know if that will be beneficial for you in the future, because they helped me so much when I left university, just to sort of being involved with the local artist scene and everything. I think as a company, they're really useful for local artists to get to know.
Yeah, I agree, totally.
And it's just been such a joy to talk to you both. It really has. And just, I think for me, today's been a really kind of like eye-opening conversation around that whole concept of how the work that you create impacts on the people that see it, and the passion behind what you do being about the experience of your life, and the joy with which you both talk about your work. It's just lovely. It's really, really nice just to hear artists talking so fluently and beautifully about the kind of work that you're making and what you want it to do and where you want it to go. The exciting thing is the idea of seeing Zoe's work bigger and bolder and in more places, and seeing your piece finished and on tour, all those things are just, just waiting to happen. It's exciting.
I'm really interested to see how your stuff works in different spaces, just because I think if you did it in a really small venue that's got 50 people in it, it'd have a very particular vibe. But then if you went to somewhere bigger that's got 500 people or 200, whatever, it'd have a completely different vibe.
Yeah, and the puppets would have to be bigger, I think.
No,
500 people, the person at the back isn't going to see this.
That's enough for three years, and a nosebleed sees us.
7 hours puppets, brilliant. I love it.
And just the idea of trying.
Well, not neither of them.
Simmer down, Jane. And also the protest, the idea, there is change has to happen. And culture and the arts and creativity is a way for it to change. So let's just do that.
So guys, thank you very much for coming down today and being on the podcast. It's been I feel like we could have spoken for another 2 hours, to be fair. But I think there's been loads of stuff in there. And yeah, I think that's everything for me. Have I forgot anything?
I don't think you've forgotten anything, Jack.
That's all good. Thank you very much.
Big lions.
And speak to you soon.
Yeah, thank you.
Pie on your face!
Thank you so much. It's been so fun to see you.